This episode features depictions of violence, death, and language that some listeners may find offensive, as well as discussions of suicide, murder. Listener's discretion is advised, especially for children under 13.
Okay, this is fine. You guys got to laugh. There is no laughing people queue over here. But yeah, so let's go ahead. Just imagine, like, a serial killer would always plead not guilty for his crimes, whereas true crime podcasters who would be doing studies on this serial killers, if they are put in a court, so what would the scene look like? It would be like, you know, some true crime podcasters would be like, "Your Honor, I would like to plead guilty as well as request the death penalty." And the judge would be like, "This is a parking ticket." That's an end of the joke. And we have just like, we have two kinds of people. People who kill and other kind of people who could literally not tell that this is not what they wanted when the nail lady would literally chop their fingers off. We would be diving into the story as we would be talking today about a Russian maniac who started an underground colony of female slaves who existed purely for sexual pleasure and financial gain. The surviving victims had crudely tattooed words "slave" on their foreheads. This Russian maniac, known as Alexander Komin, was a modern-day slave owner and serial killer. Despite claiming only four victims, he was dubbed the maniac of the 20th century by the media. You are listening to Crime with K, your shortest and sweetest destination for bizarre and true crime stories. Welcome to Crime with K. For more updates, please don't forget to follow me on Crime with K Instagram. Let's get into the story. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, some of the luckier residents of this town got a chance to own their garages. Most used metal shacks to store car parts, farm equipment, and potatoes. Alexander Komin, aged 44, was an electrician by profession. He used his to dig himself an underground colony for female slaves. By his own admission, Mr. Komin lured homeless women and kept them chained in a 100-square-foot bunker buried 40 feet deep. He starved, bet, and had sex with his captives. By the time he was arrested on July 21st, two men and two women had been murdered. Two of the three women who had survived had the word "slave" crudely tattooed on their foreheads. Mr. Komin also had a utilitarian streak. He installed three sewing machines and put his captives to work stitching underwear, flood house coats, and oven mitts that he sold all over the town. Everyone in Vyataski Polyani, an industrial town of 40,000 people 600 miles east of Moscow, was horrified by the secret life of Mr. Komin, who was well liked, but few expressed much pity for his captives. "A normal woman would never have survived such conditions," Nadezhda Kamansky explained tartly. "A normal woman would have either have died or killed the man." Mrs. Kamaskyai, 48, is deputy director of the local hospital where the two long-time captives were first treated. these women were asocial, if you know what I mean. They could endure things normal women could not. Almost all the victims had a trial of broken marriages and abandoned children, and at least one has a prison record. And Mrs. Kamaskaya's views is widely shared. Russia is untouched by notions of women's solidarity and victims' rights. Like thousands of provincial towns, Vyataskai Polyani is a tightly knit community in surely decline. Half the workers at the local ornaments factory have been laid off. The other half get their wages $50 a month, months late. Almost everybody struggles to stay even, and there is little sympathy for neighbors who slip through the cracks. When Tatiana Melnikova and Tatiana Kozikova, 37 and 38 respectively, first showed their tattooed faces on local television, the municipal authorities opened bank accounts for them so viewers could donate $400 needed to remove the tattoos. So far, not one ruble has been deposited. Both women and the third survivor, Irina Ganushina, 23, have returned to a so-called normal life. Mrs. Ganushina, who was lured to Mr. Common's garage on March 1st, spent 3 months in the bunker until Mr. Common decided to marry her. He brought her back up above the ground, settled her in his apartment, and brought a wedding dress. When she found a chance to get away from him, she went to the police. She now lives with her mother and 3-year-old daughter. Mrs. Melnikova and Mrs. Kovizoka camp together in one room of a communal apartment belonging to Mrs. Melnikova's mother. Mr. Gorman sits in an iron cage in a cell a quarter of a mile away, awaiting trial on murder and kidnapping charges. Russia has a moratorium on death penalty, so he faces 25 years to life in prison. Mr. Gorman and his captives alike recount their stories without much emotion. A small, wiry man with an engaged smile and bright blue eyes. Mr. Komen sat calmly in his cell wearing brown sneakers with laces removed and expressed no remorse at all. Quote, "I'm so sorry that I didn't get a chance to marry Rina or finish my underground dream," unquote, he said. To expand his bunker by adding several more rooms and a real bathroom. He also said he felt he was doing his victims a favor. These were unemployed, homeless women, he said. I gave them a place to live and a steady job. Mr. Komen said he had felt weighed down by responsibility of keeping his underground workshop going. Every day, he said, I had to think about them, think about feeding them. He said the beatings and tattoos were necessary. When they tried to escape, they had to be punished. After that, I guess they did fear me. Mr. Komen, who spent 3 years in jail for hooliganism in early 1970s and learned the sewing trade in prison, does not think he is insane. Of course, such a crazy idea would not come to a normal man, but still, I think I'm normal. His dream dwelling consisted of 2 tiny, cramped, damp, and filthy rooms, 3 bunks in one, and a television set and 3 sewing machines in the other. When Mr. Komen arrived each morning, a light would go on, a signal for his slaves to put metal wires attached to the wall around their necks, lock them, and place the key where he could see it. Mostly, the decor suggests Mr. Komen's odd fantasies. Pornographic pin-ups adorn most walls. alongside hand-sewn crosses and icons. On the wall above the lowest bunk bed, the victims had pasted their own sources of inspiration, pictures of the Madonna and Child and photographs of Harrison Ford and Barry Manilow. Three trapdoors separated the bunker from freedom, the sturdiest stolen from a military base. The steel ladder to the floor of his garage was electrified to prevent escape. It took Mr. Coleman and an accomplice, Alexander Mikhail, 4 years to dig the bunker and the shaft. Mr. Mikhail, 30, a local security guard, is also under arrest. The first victim was a neighbor, Vera Tola Poive, who came to the bunker in the summer of 1995 after a drinking bout with Mr. Coleman. She helped him lure an acquaintance, Tatiana Melnikova, and her boyfriend Nikolai Malkia, both experienced tailors. Mr. Malkia was poisoned, his body dumped in a nearby field. Later, Mrs. Tolpaveya fell from favor and was forced to choose either to drink antifreeze or have it injected in her veins. She chose the former and died as the two Tatianas looked on. Tatiana Kozikova, a cook from Ulyanovsk, had served 2 years in jail there and in July 1995 accepted Mr. Coleman's offer of a drink and job. Yet another woman, Tatiana Nozickova, 28, known as Oksana, was picked up in the train station in 1996, but she turned out to have leukemia and no work ethic. She too died of antifreeze poisoning. Yevgeny Shivov, a former paratrooper whom Mr. Coleman recruited to help him expand the bunker, was later electrocuted. The bodies like Mr. Malyak's were dumped in abandoned fields. The police initially assumed all the victims died of alcohol poisoning from moonshine vodka, a common cause of death in the provinces. Mr. Kozikawa is angry at Mr. Coleman not just for what he did but for what he now tells reporters and police officers. "He's trying to convince people that we wanted to be there, that we liked it," she said indignantly. "I hated him." She said they begged him for better food than potatoes and bread. She craved a slice of cake, but he refused. She said he did offer to cut up Mrs. Nazimova's body and let them eat a part of it. The only kindness she could recall was that he once brought her a book she asked for, a romantic biography of Napoleon and Josephine. Mrs. Kozikova said she didn't fall apart when the police took her back into the bunker during their investigation. "I didn't feel like crying," she said. "I just could not believe that I lived there for 2 years." Following this murder, so this 44-year-old bastard kept Tatiana Melnikova for 2.5 years and Tatiana Kozikova for 2 years in the cave that was over like 12 meters deep. One more horizontal bunker locked with a metal door branched off the cave. Following a devilish whim, Coleman tattooed the word slave on the foreheads of the woman. He liked to collar and shackle his slaves. He bed them with rubber hose and raped. Nobody outside the garage could hear the cries of the people enslaved in the caves, as the depth of the bunker muffled the sounds. The man connected a staircase to the current so that the slaves couldn't get out of the bunker. The tiny room with a very low ceiling and partitioned off with a thin wall was a scenery for terrible tragedy that lasted for several months. The Japanese television agrees that they won't be able to reproduce the whole of the story authentically. They say it is not their main objective. They are making a documentary, not a long-form thriller. Okay, so journalists called this guy a devil's incarnate, a monster, and the maniac. Indeed, he was too cruel towards the people whom he kept prisoners. He even cruelly executed 4 of them. The rest couldn't resist. They just had to live in accordance with the law of the hell. Accomplice of Common, Alexander Milk was never present at the executions, but he saw how Common tortured the people and helped him do away with the dead bodies of the executed. Common was obsessed with strange idea of making an underground city. He persistently burrowed the rocky soil and cherished a dream of making an underground menagerie. He wanted to breed black cats in the menagerie and had an idea to make souvenir pictures of cats' felts. The man was real devil in flesh. One of the cave walls, there was a picture with a devil dressed like a sultan in it. The devil had a whip with which he lashed a concubine from his harem. It was Common's best picture. He prohibited to take it off. However, the maniac didn't object when the slave tore one more picture out of the magazine and attached it to the same wall. An inscription on the picture said, "Zombie is utmost evil." The man was flattered with such characteristic address to him. Although the man is already dead, the poor woman whom Common kept prisoner still considered him the devil incarnate. It was a quirk fate, but Maniac was buried close to the grave of Tatiana Kozikova's father. The woman was one of his slaves, as I've been mentioning. The woman tells that when her mother came to notice, she came to pay her respects to her husband's grave, she nearly fainted when noticed that Maniac Alexander Common was buried there as well. It is strange that church allowed to bury the killer on the same cemetery with other people. I mean, wonder indeed. So when this guy was sentenced to life imprisonment, he committed suicide in the prison on June 15th, 1999. That was end of the story. It's a ultimate tragedy because he didn't get to live to suffer whatever his actions were, and very, very darkly a morbid ending that he was given such a respectful burial is a thing that I cannot digest. I don't think so. It is a form of justice to the victims or the of their families also. So that's it for today. We had this short, bizarre, not so sweet crime story. I mean, come on, it's crime stories, how can it be sweet? But yeah, it was a little short. We had covered all the information in brief. And remember, always listen to Crime with K. And always listen to my podcast and not pop up as an episode on my podcast. Take care.